Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe, that's Burge, Manish alongside as well. We got a loaded show again, dude. The season's flying by. I took an absolute massive L in the pick sections last week. I'm sure Burge will get to that with his little spreadsheet over there. We got some current events to talk about off the top of the show though. But besides that, boys, how we doing? Talk to me.
Dude, I mean, I can't be feeling any better about the way my team is right now. I mean, Joe, I know we're going to have a nice fun Crisco segment later, and we had some fun discourse in the group chat over the past couple of days with our boy Manish over there. And we'll get into that, I'm sure, on the podcast. Manish, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I think that Patrick Mahomes, I mean, Drake May is off to a great start. and I can't wait to hear what you guys think of the Patriots quarterbacks. Rise to superstardom, apparently.
Yeah, I was telling my friends this weekend, don't care what side of the spectrum you're on, but we were talking about the No Kings rally this weekend, and I told them that I'm going to have a One King rally this weekend. It's just going to be me and a Drake May jersey with no fucking pants on. Sorry, I swore off the top of the podcast. That'll be the last one, promise. But anyway, we got a lot to get to. Speaking of, you just mentioned Manish, Patrick Mahomes. Even though they're not in the playoffs, creeping up on halfway through the season, what the Chiefs did in a dominant fashion versus albeit a lowly Raiders team. Mahomes has 3 touchdowns in the first half. He's nearly flawless. He's doing some of the stuff we've been asking him. We haven't seen from him in a couple years. And I think that what this shows is Mahomes is one of those quarterbacks like Brady. I can't really remember any in recent memory, maybe a Flacco or Ben Roethlisberger that kind of just plays the way that the team needs them to play to win. I think even though you're not a huge fan, I think Hurts has a little bit of that in him too. He plays the game that he needs to have the team win. And I think right now, coach quarterback combo, we talk about it a million times, but that QB doing whatever he needs to win is just like, It was early in his career. We were like every week he's doing something we've never seen before. And I feel like this year we're back to that where he is on a different stratosphere than any other quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yeah. And he looks very much like the MVP Patrick Mahomes that we're used to seeing. 6 touchdowns, no interceptions these last 2 games. They beat a tomato can, shut out a tomato can in Las Vegas last week. But let's not forget that they had that big win against the Lions the week before. They remind me, and you guys can speak more to this, but they remind me a lot of the Belichick Brady teams that sometimes maybe didn't stumble out of the gate, but weren't shot out of a cannon, and it took them 3, 4, 5 weeks to find their identity, and then once they did, they were off to the races. And you look at Kansas City and how they're playing now, adding Rashee Rice back. He made his presence felt in pretty dominant fashion in his first game back with a couple touchdowns. They look like they are about to take off. A lot of football left, but this looks like the Chiefs team of a few years ago that really dominated and was Super Bowl bound. I'm not ready to go to that level yet. There are other teams in the conference that could be formidable opponents, but this Kansas City team looks vastly different than they did even a month ago.
It's interesting you bring up about the Belichick-Brady teams, because in New England, it was always talked about that September was the extension of the preseason and that, the season didn't start till October, and all that mattered was that you were playing your best ball come December. And I think you're spot on about the Chiefs. Me, as a Chiefs hater, I don't like to see it. I'm sick of the Chiefs, probably similar to how everybody was sick of the Patriots for all those years. But it's hard to really, kind of go against them. I mean, the last 2 weeks, the Lions game still sticks out as obviously the most impressive win. I mean, we'll get to the Lions when we talk about our rankings here, but beating up on the Raiders, I mean, they did what they were supposed to do. That's kind of what you expected going into that game. The Raiders are a absolute dumpster fire. Sorry, Pat, but that's what you expected the Chiefs to do. And
a dumpster fire is like not even like close to what that Raiders team is, dude. They paid Geno Smith like an absolutely abhorrent amount of guaranteed. Did you guys see what happened in Candy, New Hampshire recently, where all of those cars caught on fire They had like it, they had to take like a million gallons of water to put it out. That is what's going on in Vegas. It's not a dumpster fire where it's just like some cute little 30-yard dumpster behind like a weed dispensary in Framingham just getting absolutely lit on fire. No, no, this is like DEFCON 5, DEFCON 3 level, like, holy crap, like, we need to stick a hose in the ocean and put this out.
You're spot on. You're spot on about that. And again, I'll apologize to Pat for you for those comments. But
cool stadium, though, Pat. Nasty stadium.
You know, Rashee Rice came right back. I mean, I don't think I personally didn't expect him to just come in and dominate like the way that he did in that game after being out for 6 weeks with everything else that's gone on in his life over the last year. But you, Joe, to your point, the coach, the quarterback combo. You plug anybody in there, and they're going to do guys, that. So.
You guys had them written, dude. I knew this was coming. This is like, you know, like that team that's just like there's always the team that you're just like, here we effing go again. Here we go again.
Let's face it. They're not good anymore. Dude, it's just not
like,
good anymore.
Dude, it's like, even though they never won a championship, dude, it's like the fucking old, the old Miami Heat teams. Not the old Miami Heat teams, but like the Jimmy Butler Spoelstra teams that used to give the Celtics fits. Dude, they'd come in like ninth place. They would friggin' lose a play-in game just to play the Celtics. And you'd be like, here are these effing guys again. They're pulling guys out of the stands to play for them. Friggin' KC has Tyquan effing Thornton playing for them, keeping the boat afloat. And it's just, you, like we say a million times on the podcast, I'll get to it when I talk about the teams that I'm going to talk about in the top five in my picks. But, like, God, man, it's just they're inevitable. The Chiefs are now the new inevitable team. As long as they have 15 at quarterback, pencil them in to somewhere in mid to late January. That's just how it's going to be until something. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if this guy plays till he's 45, dude. I don't know.
I certainly hope that does not happen.
And with the way they get calls, the dude hasn't gotten touched in the 8 years he's been in the league.
Yeah. That's a whole nother topic. That's a whole nother discussion we could go down a rabbit hole. Anyways, on. I don't know if we want to do that.
Well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about another quarterback that we can use to segue into Manish's favorite topic here after this one. But we had Sean Payton, wise ass Sean Payton, throwing a couple shots across the country there at Russell Wilson. correct me if I'm wrong, boys, but he basically said, "Yeah, I wish that happened before they made the quarterback change." Right? Pretty basically what he wanted to say is he wanted to do that to Russell Wilson. I'm a pretty petty guy when it comes to sports. This was fucking awesome. I hate Russell Wilson. Gets me. One of those guys.
That's right.
Yeah, it just doesn't hit me. He doesn't hit me the right way. He just, like, the no future in the locker room. And so, yeah, just some of the stuff. I just, not my cup of tea. Not a bad guy or anything like that. But this was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious. A lot of people thought it was Bush League. Obviously, the Giants got their backup and stuff like that. I am going to talk about that in my pick section. But, yeah, dude, I didn't have a problem with this. I thought this was great, and I wish there was more of this like there is kind of in the NBA and in other leagues.
Well, look, I think that Sean Payton meant to compliment Jackson Dart. He does have a close relationship with the Mara family, dating back from when he was an assistant, a coordinator with the Giants. So I think that was his intent. But clearly Russell Wilson took it as a swipe. And what I actually thought was refreshing was Russell Wilson's response on social media, because typically, as you said, he's pretty corporate. He's pretty buttoned up. I liken him a lot to Derek Jeter. Really didn't say anything inflammatory throughout his career. Kept the company line. And that's been Russell Wilson's MO his entire career. So to see him kind of break from character, if you will, and call Sean Payton classless, and then add on that by saying it wasn't surprising that he was classless. A little bit refreshing. You got to see, a side of him that you typically don't see, which is a normal reaction. If you're in Russell Wilson's shoes, I mean, this guy's a future Hall of Fame quarterback, and regardless of whether you did or didn't get along with him when he was your quarterback, I'm talking from Sean Payton's perspective, I just don't think it was necessary to say what he did, even though I think it was coming from a good place in terms of complimenting Jackson Dart. Clearly Russell Wilson didn't take it that way. I don't have any kind of problem with Russell Wilson you know, kind of firing back publicly in the manner that he did.
The only thoughts I have on that, Joe, is I am 100% in agreement with what you said. I couldn't have said it any better myself. That's exactly how I feel about Russell Wilson. He's just a guy that is just, he's rubbed me the wrong way since that whole Broncos country, let's ride. Broncos country, let's ride. I can't stand that.
Well, let me ask you something. Let me ask you something, Birch. Look, I get a lot of people think there's a, you know, element of phoniness there. Now, I don't know him. We don't know him, right?
No.
But he does say and do the right things. It's not as if he's, you know, throwing people under the bus, players, coaches, you know, at any stop, really. And he could have done that many times after he left Seattle because some of his former teammates have really not been shy about voicing how they feel about him. He's just taken the high road. So the idea that a player can consistently take the high road for the better part of, you know, decade and a half and then get criticized for that, I think it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, of course, but just because the guy is corny and says the right things and doesn't engage, you know, in the muck for the most part, I can't get on board with quote unquote hating somebody because that's the path that he chooses to take.
It's just one of those things that's cringeworthy. I don't have anything against him as a person.
I hate Russell Wilson. I'm not a fan, but I think you made a good point, and I want to echo that, is that, like, Sean Payton, I love what he said. I think Russell Wilson is in every right to say what he said and every right to fire back. Like, this is partially why, like, I love the, like, I brought it up, why I love the NBA, why I used to love, like, the early 2000s football. There's a little bit more personality. I don't know. I love, and I'm sure you guys can liken it. Burrs, you used to follow wrestling? Like, this is like the storylines and stuff like that make the game so much more, in my opinion, make the game so much more freaking interesting. And like, I know these teams will probably won't play again for another like 4 or 8 years or whatever, but I don't know. Just gives us something to talk about. And I don't know. I just love pettiness and crap talking. It's the best. But let's switch over. Let's walk across the hallway here in the Meadowlands to our second favorite, third favorite team to talk. I would say we love to talk about the Pats, the Eagles, and the Jets. I say would be number three. So I think they had another abysmal performance. Aaron Glenn's being noncommittal at quarterback. He had some unbelievable Woody Johnson comments after some unbelievable comments about the quarterback position after signing Justin Fields to a 2-year guaranteed deal. Manish, I'll let you take this one away. I don't think I need to set you up any more than that.
Well, the Jets are an embarrassment to embarrassing teams. And as far as Woody Johnson goes, he makes Jimmy Haslam look like Robert Kraft. And this is a guy who has owned the team for 26 years. They are 65 games under 500. They haven't had a winning season now in 10 years. Unless they run the table this year, which they obviously won't. They haven't made the playoffs in 15 seasons. That's a record for North American team sports. And I just thought it was unconscionable for the owner to throw the starting quarterback under the bus as he did this week, when essentially he said that Justin Fields cannot complete a pass. And if they did complete a pass, things would be better. To that, I would say if the Jets had a competent owner, things would be better, because we can look at the low-hanging fruit, and in this case this year it's Aaron Glenn and their new general manager Darren Mooji. But the root of the problem is the infrastructure of the organization. The Jets are not dysfunctional because they make mistakes at head coach or general manager. The Jets are dysfunctional because they're rotten at the core, at the high level decision making positions in the organization, and there is no higher position in the organization than owner. So for Woody Johnson to throw Justin Fields under the bus like that, and look, I think we're all in agreement that Justin Fields has vastly underperformed, and it was a terrible decision to throw $30 million guaranteed at him. But as an owner, you just do not say that about the quarterback. That puts your head coach in a precarious position. Aaron Glenn subsequently had to answer questions about what the owner said. I just think that Woody Johnson needs to not say as much. I think being available is one thing, but the words that come out of his mouth consistently over the better part of a generation, 25 plus years, has been embarrassing. And there's no I in Johnson, but there's a capital I in inept. And and that's what this owner is. And you can say, hey, you know what? Things will be better if he weren't around. I completely agree. But as long as that family owns the organization, the Jets are never going to win. I actually feel very bad for a lot of friends of mine who are Jets fans. Same. They are pinning their hopes to an incompetent and inept owner. Even when he was not around for 4 years, when he worked for the Trump administration as the UK ambassador, his brother took over, and that was the worst four-year stretch in the 60-plus year history of the franchise. So it's not like things are going to get better if he passes it along to a family member. They're dysfunctional. They're broken. They've always been broken. And it's not because of the GMs and the head coaches they hire. It's because of people above their pay grade.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you hire so many GMs. You hire so many head coaches. At some point, a competent, not an inept owner would have to look in the mirror and be like, what's going on here? Like, at some point, it's, you got to take a look in the mirror and call spade a spade with what's been going on down there.
Yeah. And I think we said it in the group chat. You said it there in your explanation there, Manish. It's organizational alignment, and it's the ability to pivot in unison. You see in the Titans with their owner down there, she makes pretty rash decisions. You see it in the Cowboys where there's not a lot of alignment. It's kind of what Jerry says goes. These teams that are strong, like the Chiefs and the Steelers, and these teams that before the Patriots, they just had organizational stabilization. Like, they were just stable. They had the same people in the same jobs, and they had everybody aligned. When you had somebody come in, they would bring in all of their people. It's not the owner handpicking people to work together, which is kind of something that I got on the Patriots for doing this year with the OC and the head coach. But you see all of these arranged marriages fail, and I think Woody Johnson wanted to get rid of Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Glenn was the only guy in the interview who said he had the balls to do it to his face. So I think there's so many things that are outside of football that make decisions in organizations like the Jets that just cause them to just fall legitimately decades and decades behind other teams. Like, even their field sucks. Like, not only does the organization stink from soup to nuts, the field injures their players. They're friggin' like, that field injures everybody. So it's not only is it just like a dumpster fire in the organization, there's everything. And the thing is, dude, is I've gone to Jets games. I'm friends with Jets fans. They're extremely loyal. Usually, and when it gets to this point of the season, they're extremely rational about it, irrational and level-headed, and they know what they have as a team. But, dude, it's just – it could not happen to a worse subset of loyal fans. Like, these fans are – like, I couldn't imagine – not winning a playoff game in 50, like the first effing game I ever watching football was the Snow Bowl and Adam Vinatieri kicking field goals through the snow. Like, we suffered through 2 4-win seasons. We had a losing season, and then we wanted to fire the best coach of all time. And then we had a 4-win season, and we ended up firing the best coach of all time. Like, that's what we're like. I could not juxtaposing that to some of the things that these Jets fans have gone through. Mm-hmm. Like, you have that run in the late aughts. And then it's immediately undone by the butt fumble. Like, literally one thing happened on Thanksgiving in 2012. It's all over. And I don't know. I feel so, like, shout out to Shiloh if you're listening. It's just shout out to you, dude. You are such a loyal and legitimate Jets fan, all you guys out there. I feel, dude, there's just one video, I think, Burz, you sent it, of this young Jets fan. And he's just like, I hate this team. I was born into this. He's like, I'm not having kids because I don't want them to be subjected to this. Like, it's affecting generations in New York.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, again, you know, barring, you know, something off the field, there's not going to be an ownership change. You don't sell when you're making money hand over fist unless there's some sort of scandal off the field. And, you know, we've seen that with Daniel Snyder being forced to sell. The Panthers owner being forced to sell several years back, barring something like that, the Johnson family is going to own this team for the foreseeable future. I just think that maybe there's some messaging issues that have never been straightened out when it comes to Woody Johnson. I've spoken to Woody Johnson many times, and I can tell you he is an odd person. just the way that he speaks, it's odd. And look, he's lived a different type of life than 99% of the people, you know, who root for his team. The messaging kind of is broken. I think it's, you know, it's a failure from a PR standpoint. But ultimately, you know, Woody Johnson can improve if he actually invested the time to learn about the organization, to learn about the infrastructure. You know, you're seeing that with Irsay's daughter being more hands-on than a lot of owners are. And I'm not saying that Woody Johnson needs to get the headset on during the game, but there are ways.
You got to do something, dude.
Yeah, you've got to educate yourself. I mean, I think there's ways to educate yourself about your product, you know, about your franchise. And, you know, I've always been told, you know, many times from people who have spoken to Woody Johnson, to from people who are in Woody Johnson's inner circle, the best way to get Woody Johnson to agree with you is to be the last person to talk to him, regardless of what the issue is, whether it's about his private equity firm, whether it's about football stuff. If you've got competing interests, you just let the other people talk to him first, and then you close the deal by being the last person to talk to him. And if you are the last person to talk to him and are somewhat competent, you're going to get him to agree with your viewpoint. And I think that, in essence, is what Woody Johnson has been as the Jets owner. He's easy to, you know, manipulate in those terms, and he doesn't have a firm football background. And that's why you see him, you know, after every few years hiring a consulting firm to bring in GMs and bring in head coaches, because he doesn't have, you know, the Rolodex to do it himself. And I don't think that's going to change, frankly, anytime soon.
Yeah. And I think all the Jets fans are in agreement with you. And I think the only thing that's going to change is if they legitimately boycott the team, stop going to the game, stop buying merchandise, stop watching and stuff like that. And then that becomes a detriment to their business. And other than that, I don't see any way this situation changes.
No, what I'll say about that, and I've heard, you know, others say the same thing. The owners get the bulk of their money through the TV deals.
That's true.
The NFL TV deal is what really brings in the most revenue. So if you're not going to buy, you know, a Breece Hall jersey or a Garrett Wilson jersey, if you're not going to pay a ticket to go to MetLife Stadium and watch a game, at the end of the day, those are such you know, nominal slights against the bottom line. He's going to make a lot of money, like every other owner makes a lot of money, because of the massive TV contract that the NFL has.
Dude,
that's not going to change.
The Jets are so screwed that everybody has to stop watching football for them to change. That's how effed the Jets are. Everybody has to stop watching football. But yeah, dude, I think we beat on the Jets like a bit, or like a rented mule every week. So let's get off their back, because I'm sure we'll jump right on it next Tuesday night when we start recording again. But Birch, your time to shine. Bust out that fancy spreadsheet. Tell me how much I sucked last week.
I got the spreadsheet, but I don't have any awesome music queued up like you do normally, Joe. But I wish I did, because it was a great week for me. It was not a great week for either one of you two. So let's start. I'm going to start with the basement dweller, and that's Mr. Joe. Joe had Jacksonville plus 4.5 against the Rams. That was a massive loss. He had Green Bay minus 6.5 against the Cardinals, and Green Bay won, but they did not cover that.
That was a tough not cover.
They
friggin' dominated that game.
Yep, tough. And Jacoby Brissett made sure you didn't cover. And then you had New Orleans plus 5.5 against the Bears, and that did not pan out either for you, Joe. So cue your music up.
Fly away from here, my 500 or 500 plus record. Let's move on. I don't have any thoughts. I'm just upset.
Well, the good news for you, Joe, because of the next guy's push, you are not in the basement. You are not in the basement. Manish, another tough week for you. You did get a win, though. You did get a win. You had Seattle minus 3.5, the last game of the week, to salvage the week, prevent that from happening. They beat Houston up in Seattle. You did take the loss against the Chargers -1.5, which I was very happy about that you took that loss against the Indianapolis Colts. And then you had the Minnesota Vikings +2 against your Eagles.
Yeah.
Right after railroading those Eagles last week. And the Eagles made you pay and won that game outright.
Yeah, so. I misjudged Carson Wentz. I still think of Carson Wentz as the MVP candidate the year that the Eagles went to the Super Bowl.
Dude, the best is fucking Manish is like, I'm only betting Minnesota if they have Carson Wentz.
I did say that. I did say. I'm glad you got your notebook out and remember that, Joe. Thanks for the reminder.
I got a little. You gave that reminder. Here.
That's almost word for word what I said.
That's great. That's great. Well, myself, I'm going to take the victory lap, a 3-0 week.
If I hear a zipper, dude, I'm going to be shutting my camera off.
Second time in 3 weeks, a 3-0 performance.
That's pretty good.
Straight to the top of the leaderboard because of those weeks. I had Indianapolis +1.5 against the Chargers, the other half of Manish's pick there.
Looking
I had
back on it, what the hell was that line?
I don't know. Sorry. That's why I took it. That's why I took it, brother.
That's like the San Francisco line this week that Manish will get to.
What can I say? Carolina -1 against the Jets. I had to sweat that one out a little bit. They only won 13-6 against the Jets.
I don't
know
why you would ever bet that game and force yourself to watch it.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. I bet it and I didn't watch it. So I was that confident. And then my second underdog pick was Dallas +2.5 against the Commanders, and Dallas won in a blowout. So it was an awesome week for Burge. Right to the top of the leaderboard. We got Joe. Actually, I'm at 11-10. Joe, you're at 9-12. Manish, 8-12-1.
That is terrible. 8-12-1. I mean, that is so bad. I need Woody Johnson to talk about my team.
Well, that'd be great.
About my record.
Well, no favors to the leader in this week's pod, in this week's picks, because I got the scraps this week. So Manish was like, I went bad. I had a bad week. I'm jumping right out in front and grabbing the first picks.
Yeah,
out of
I think
this
we
one.
Had another 11:30 Sunday.
Yes.
I had, like I said, other than the Eagles game, which I totally whiffed on, I really had no conviction on any of these other games. I got lucky with the Seattle game. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. After this podcast, I'm going to give you a week 9 picks.
The look ahead lines.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to start off with the scraps. I have my first game is the Los Angeles Chargers hosting the Minnesota Vikings. I have the Chargers -3.5. Carson Wentz showed me a lot against the Eagles. I, too, was in Manish's camp last week, even though I didn't have the pick. I expected Carson Wentz to do a lot better against the Eagles, and I was starting to trend towards Manish's opinion about the Eagles, too, but they kind of put a stop to that for me in that game. The Chargers are coming off that tough loss to the Indianapolis Colts. I like Jim Harbaugh's team to rebound there. Aronde Gadsden, that sleeper. He's coming alive for them.
About Mr. Gadsden,
he's coming alive. He's coming alive. I like the Chargers -3.5. My underdog pick. The Lions kind of wild given the records of the teams in this one. I have the Chicago Bears +6.5 against the Ravens in Baltimore. Lamar Jackson did practice today for the first time in I think almost over 3 weeks. First time suiting up the pads.
Severe diarrhea.
We don't know what he's going to look like if he even plays. If he doesn't play and then that announcer comes out, that line is going to definitely shift. And I liked what the Bears did last week against the Saints. I like them to continue that. And I think we're going to continue to see Baltimore fall unless Lamar Jackson is able to come back and be Lamar Jackson. And that doesn't even account for the injuries that this team has suffered, especially defensively. So give me the Chicago Bears +6.5. My third pick, we're doing something new in this segment this week, and we're going to continue it for the rest of the season. We're each going to give you a lock, our lock of the week. So far, the locks, self-proclaimed locks of Manish have not panned out. So he's, I think, wanting to drag us down with him with that. So we'll see. We're going to have one lock winner out of this week, and I'm going to start with my lock. and that's Green Bay minus three. I am not sold on the Pittsburgh Steelers, who they're playing against. I think their defense is fraudulent, and they're coming off that loss to Joe Flacco in Cincinnati, which Cincinnati has been kind of a mess since Joe Burrow went down. I expected them to get a little bit better, having a veteran quarterback in there rather than Jake Browning. I did not expect them to really go toe-for-toe with the Steelers last week. So I really like what Green Bay is doing. We'll get to it when we talk about our power rankings in the next segment here. But give me Green Bay minus three as my lock of the week. I am going to send it over to the basement dweller. Manish.
Well, I mean, nobody likes a sort of winner, you know? I mean, not only are you a sore winner, but you're using third person references now
instead. Yeah, it's gone right to my head. Right to my head.
Look, and you have every right. I mean, my 8-12-2 record is atrocious. It's very, very.
I'll be right there with my tail between my legs when it doesn't happen this week, and I go, "Oh."
Yeah, well, I'm going to make a run. I'm a second half player. You know, I'm much like the Chiefs. You know, it takes me 4 or 5 weeks to kind of get rolling, and I'm going to take off. I'm so confident. I really could give you two locks of the week, but I'm not, because the segment is just one lock of the week per person. So I'm going to go with a start off with a game that I'm extremely confident in, and that's the Bengals giving 6.5 at home against the only winless team in the NFL, the Jets at 0-7. It looks like Tyrod Taylor is going to be the quarterback as of this recording. It hasn't been made official, but you know, given Woody Johnson's comments, I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to move off of Justin Fields and go with Tyrod Taylor. Much better passer than Justin Fields. He's also a turnover machine. And even though the Bengals defense has been laughable for most of the season, I think that they'll be able to get at least one or two turnovers off of Tyrod Taylor. Offensively, the Bengals look like a completely different outfit with Joe Flacco at quarterback. Jake Browning clearly demonstrated that he is not an NFL starting caliber quarterback right now. Ja'Marr Chase getting 23 targets and 16 catches is really unbelievable. I can't imagine that he could duplicate that, but I think he'll have his way against a really poor Jet secondary. Who knows if Sauce Gardner is going to play? He's dealing with a concussion. By the way, they've got T. Higgins on the other side, who played really well the other night against Pittsburgh. Joe Flacco has really just injected life into this offense. The run game finally came alive with Chase Brown. They were dormant for a month and a half. I just think this is an explosive offense as long as Joe Flacco is the quarterback. On the road, I can't see the Jets picking up their first win. I think this is a runaway win for Cincinnati, so I'll take the Bengals minus 6.5. The second game is one of my two underdog picks. I like Dallas at Denver. Denver is a hard place to play, but I think the Giants showed last week that even though they lost, choked it away in the fourth quarter, that you can score on this Denver defense, and that's really, tough for me to say because I'm a big believer in the Bronco defense, but the Cowboys are just a really explosive offense. They've scored 40-plus points 3 times this year. They routinely go over 30 points. CeeDee Lamb is healthy. So you got Lamb, you got Pickens, Javonte Williams, revenge game, by the way, and Javonte has really come alive in his first season with the Cowboys. Dak Prescott arguably playing the best football of his career. The defense still a little bit shaky, but I'm not really a believer in Bo Nix. I know that they erupted in the fourth quarter against the Giants last week, but they've done nothing for 3 quarters. I like the 3.5 points. I'll take that. I think Dallas can win the game, but if you're giving me more than a field goal, give me the Cowboys. And then my lock of the week, really a puzzling line. I'm not an odds maker. They have their reasoning and their rationale for how they set these lines, but for the life of me, I cannot understand why the 49ers are getting 1.5 points against the Texans. We saw the Texans last Monday night really lay an egg in a loss to Seattle. The Texans' offensive line, it looks as putrid as ever. And because of that, C.J. Stroud looks as lost as ever. And who knows if they'll have Nico Collins. He suffered a concussion. It's a short week. He may not be available. And even if he were available, I just love this 49er team, 5-2, coming off a really emphatic win against a team that some people were thinking was an up-and-coming team in Atlanta. They really controlled that game. Robert Saleh, Jets former head coach, has this defense playing exceedingly well. I can't imagine the Texans being able to move the ball against the Niners. I love the Niners all day long, and for the life of me, again, I do not understand why they're getting 1.5 points, but I'll gladly take it, and that's my lock of the week.
Well, we had one of those locks was cherry-picked. Cherry-picked the Jets. That seems to be a common theme on this podcast every week. I was it last week. Manish on it this week. And you heard it here first. Manish is the Kansas City Chiefs of this podcast. So expect him to make a huge run. And if he doesn't, I hope people are in the Twitter comments getting on him about it. Joe?
Yeah, dude, I love that Niners pick. I saw that line, and I was like, you lucky bastard. So just to kick off my picks, I've got the Giants plus 7.5 in Philly. I think there's a bad taste left in their mouth when coming off their absolute just let go of the rope in Denver, losing, I think it was, they were 19-0, and it was 32-8 at one point or something crazy like that. Yeah, so I like the Giants to bounce back here. Philly's coming off a really good Jalen Hurts performance. Jalen Hurts is the kind of player that I see where everybody doubts him, and then he comes out and performs like crazy, and then everybody gets back on the bandwagon, and maybe he lays an egg here. I don't like the Giants to outright win this game, but it is a divisional game in the middle of the season. Giants are fighting to keep their season alive. Philly's fighting to kind of get back to the top of the NFC where they have been for the last couple seasons. So I think this game's going to mean a lot to both of them. Both of them are going to be prepared. I don't think covering 8 points here is in Philly's future. So give me Giants plus 7.5 there. A game that I thought about making my lock until I Woody Johnson myself, and the last person to talk about it was Burge, and he had the other side. But I still do have the Steelers plus 3 at Green Bay. Green Bay, even though they controlled the game versus the Cardinals, didn't end up covering. But I do like the Steelers to cover 3 points. Coach quarterback combo means so much in this league. I think this will be a good matchup of both of them. But I think the Steelers, I think they're a good team. They're going to bounce back. I like them plus 3 at Green Bay. And then here comes my lock of the week. This might be my mortar lock of the century. This might be the Crisco and pants off game of the week. The Pats are finally home after 3 straight road wins. The entire team after that game, all the sound this week from the coach all the way down to the special teamers have been, this team cannot wait to show the home fans what they've become. What they've become is what we'll talk about in our next segment, but what they've become to me is a smart, heady football team with talent in a bunch of different positions who has an absolutely diabolically lethal quarterback right now. I don't think you've seen anybody be on fire like this since NBA Jams, when the ball used to catch on fire, when he used to hit a bunch of threes. Like, this guy is hotter than a pistol. All right, Cleveland, Dylan Gabriel, I'm sorry, man, but holy crap, you stink, dude. I think this is going to be a close game. I don't like Cleveland to score very many points in this game. The Patriots still haven't let up 50 yards to any single rusher this year. I think they, as long as they control the ground game with Quinshon Judkins, I don't think Njoku's going to be back for this game. Dylan Gabriel stinks, and I think that'll play right into the Patriots' hands. They shut down the run, force it into Gabriel's hands. I think we're looking at a 14-3, 17-3, 21-6 kind of game. So give me the Pats minus 7 at home versus Cleveland as my mortal lock of the century of all time. Back in, like, Christopher Columbus was talking about this mortal lock when he sailed the ocean blue in 1492. He was talking about this mortal lock of the 21st century. That's how locked in I am on this game. So give me the Pats minus 7.
The last minute lock change. We couldn't go head to head on it, could we?
No, I thought that would be bad for the people. I don't want people. It's like when mom and dad are fighting, dude. You can't have mom and dad fighting.
Okay. All right. That's a fair point. Well, there you have it. There's the picks for this week. Let's talk about some power rankings.
All righty. So let's do a little history here. So I have the last couple weeks of power rankings here. Let me go back in my Rolodex here. My Rolodex.
Word of the episode right there.
Rolodex? My dude, my booby used to have an old Rolodex that you could actually like roll, dude. I probably broke it. But
I'm surprised you knew what one of those was.
Oh, I know, dude. My booby had friggin' plastic on the couch. She had a Rolodex, a rotary phone where you had to crank the numbers around, yeah. Dude. He had the TV that had the speakers built into the side, like the felt, the wooden TV the felt speakers built into the side. You had to walk across the living room. Yeah, that's how I wasn't chubby until I was 12 when she unfortunately passed away, because I didn't have to walk 3.5 miles across the living room 3 times an hour to change the channel for her. Shut up, Bibby. All right, so 2 weeks ago, we had Lions at 1, Bucks at 2, Colts at 3, Jaguars at 4. And then last week's rankings were Bucks 1, Packers 2, Lions 3, Colts 4, and the Rams 5. And after that, I'm going to throw it to Burge. Who is our number 5 team this week and why?
Number 5, Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers coming off that win against Arizona. They've looked really good all year. You know, Arizona's not all that great of a team, so you could say that that performance was a little bit underwhelming. They were coming off the bye. I like them to get back into it. I really love what Jordan Love has done this year. He's really taken that next step, and it's just another reason why you can look at the Green Bay Packers as like the definitive organization when it comes to finding these quarterbacks. They go from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love. Jordan Love isn't turning the ball over. They're methodically moving the ball down the field, and they're continuing to do it. They have Micah Parsons on defense. I think that the Green Bay Packers and the Detroit Lions are going to have a very, very good fight down to the wire for that division. And, you know, I just got done talking about what I think about the Pittsburgh Steelers this week. I expect them to win this game. This will be a good test for them on Sunday Night Football. And, you know, they're just rolling, and I expect them to keep doing it. And I know we've said a lot about the Green Bay Packers on this podcast over the last few weeks. They've been right either in the rankings or just outside of our top five, and they continue to hang around. You know, Jordan Love, again, completing passes at almost a 70% rate. We talk about the completion percentage with Drake May all the time, which I'm sure we're going to get into it again after this segment here. But, you know, you have the quarterback, the coach, Matt LaFleur. They seem to have built something there, and I expect them to keep it going. So, yeah, Green Bay Packers at 5.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I don't believe in the Packers yet. I don't know what it is. There's something about LaFleur not going for it on 4th-and-1 with Aaron effing Rodgers at your quarterback, giving the ball back to Brady. It still sticks somewhere. It's somewhere
long ago.
Stuck in my craw. It's somewhere stuck in my craw. Anyways, number 4, we had to jump. We had to bump the Bucks back down to 4. Yeah, I know, dude. It was a tough weekend for me, many different ways. Bucks, moved down to 4. They ended up losing to the another team we'll probably end up talking about here. But they're decimated by injuries. You got Mike Evans out for the year. Igbuka, he's banged up. I don't think he had Godwin on the field. I think they got a couple players out on defense. Baker's still trying to make it work. But you see, this is a team that where if Baker throws a pick, if it's there's some kind of important turnover by the offense in the game, they end up not winning. The Lions came shot out of a cannon in this game. And I don't think the Bucs can keep up. They just don't have the weapons. They don't have the firepower right now. They were kind of put on their heels. I'm not giving up on the Bucs yet. I think they'll be there at the end of the day. I like a Bucs Rams, Bucs Eagles, Eagles. I think NFC Championship game is what we're looking at here. I really do believe in the Bucs. But right now, I think they're going through that midseason lull. I think they need to get a couple players back on offense and defense, make sure it's not just the Baker show, and they'll be all right. Like, once again, we talk about coach quarterback combo a lot. I still think this coach quarterback combo can go a long way. Who do we got up next, Manish?
We got the 6-1 Colts. And I'm not really sure how many people believe in the 6-1 Colts. I'm not sure I believe in the 6-1 Colts, but, you know, the statistics don't lie. You know, offensively, they are a juggernaut. They've scored at least 29 points in 6 of their 7 games. Now, they did lose to their toughest opponent, the Rams, a few weeks ago. But Daniel Jones still playing at a really high level. You guys are big completion percentage people, so he's completing over 70% of his passes this year. But make no mistake about it that, you know, this offense, this team is centered on Jonathan Taylor. He's already got 10 touchdowns. The Colts are on pace to set the single season rushing touchdown record. It's a little bit fugazi because the 1962 Packers had 36 touchdowns in 14 games, 3 more games that the Colts have. but they're still running exceptionally well. Jonathan Taylor looks like the Jonathan Taylor from 3 or 4 years ago. And as long as he stays healthy, this team is going to be relevant. Shane Steichen deserves a lot of credit. There were a lot of question marks about him entering this season. You know, you saw firsthand as an offensive coordinator in Philadelphia what he could do for Jalen Hurts. You're seeing him do similar things for Daniel Jones. Just a powerhouse offense somehow, even though you know what they're going to do. And it's going through Jonathan Taylor, but somehow they always score 30-plus points a week. They dominated the Chargers on the road last week. That was never a game. And I was really surprised by that. As, you know, Burge mentioned earlier, I took the Chargers in our pick segment, but that was a joke of a game. And they dominated from Jump Street. Chargers had no answer. Jonathan Taylor ran all over them. And, you know, sooner or later, you know, I think we have to give them credit. And I think we're doing that by putting them third in the power rankings. You know, it just, I think, took me personally a little bit longer to kind of understand that they're not going anywhere. They're a legitimate playoff team. You know, how far they go once they get to the playoffs remains to be seen. But this team, you know, deserves a lot of credit for where they're at. That starts with Shane Steichen. That extends to Chris Ballard, their general manager, who had also been embattled entering this season. I did not see this Colts turnaround coming this year. And the fact that they've been so dominant for all but one game this season is a testament to, you know, their decision makers, their coaching, and their revived quarterback.
Yeah. I think we talk about coach quarterback combo. Is like, it looks like that's a budding coach quarterback combo there. I don't know. Just seems, strikes me that way. You got anything else on the Colts, Manish?
I would be surprised if they climb to 2 or 1 over the next several weeks, but they, you know, they're playing the Cupcake Titans. They'll win, obviously, this week. You know, they already beat the Titans by 3 touchdowns a month ago. So I don't think there's anything they can do, in my estimation, this week to kind of, you know, jump up to 2 or 1, regardless of what any of these other teams do. So wait and see mode. Couple weeks. They got the Steelers in a couple weeks. That should be a fun game.
Totally agree. That will be a fun game. And going back on my Bucs that I was just talking about, Baker Mayfield added to the injury report today, and Teddy Bridgewater did not practice, and the designation was teeth. Just said teeth. So I don't know if he's got a toothache.
That's got root canal written all over it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a root canal or just maybe just a toothache. Let's rub some lidocaine on there. Get out there, bucko. So I don't know how many times you said it's a buzzword. Me and Karen Garrigan, great minds think alike. Coach quarterback combo, coach quarterback combo, coach quarterback combo. I don't think there's a better one in the NFC than the Rams right now. Sean McVay and Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford had 3 touchdown passes in the first quarter, 5 touchdown passes on the game. Only had to throw for 180 yards to absolutely blow at the Jaguars. I don't know. This team, dude, they drafted well. Somehow, after trading every pick away, they've drafted well on defense. Davante Adams looks like a new guy with three touchdown catches. I don't know. This team is friggin' loaded. As soon as they get Puka Nacua back, I'm not sure how you slow this offense down. They've got the running game going. They've seemed to shore up their offensive line where Stafford isn't getting absolutely killed every game. And then when you have friggin' Davante Adams, arguably one of the best wide receivers of his era, right? I mean, who else mm-hmm. you put up against him in his age bracket? And then you have Puka Nacua, once again, in his era, besides Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase. I mean, who else are you taking over Puka Nacua right now? Dude had 120-something receptions his friggin' rookie year, fifth-round pick. So, I don't know. I like the Rams, even though McVay comes off the same way that we think Russell Wilson does. I think he's pretty authentic, and I think that's why that team really buys in, is he cares about his players. He's a super smart, innovative play caller, and he's got guys bought in. He's got smart, heady players all over the field. Puka's a great route runner, and I think Stafford is the perfect guy to run that offense. I don't know. I can't say enough good things about the Rams. I think that's another coach quarterback combo. It kind of stinks that they got started later in Stafford's career. But like, dude, this coach quarterback combo was so successful. There was rumors about McVay retiring because he's already done everything he needed to do. So I think he's got the ass again. I think a lot of people counted them out. I had them as a dark horse at last year and this year. I love this team. I think they're gonna go far. And I think they're going to go as far as their coach quarterback tandem can take them. Burge, talk to me.
Be an interesting playoff matchup if the Rams and this team meet at some point during the NFC playoffs. Our number one team, the Detroit Lions. Everybody knows me. I've been on them since last year. Real shame that they had all those injuries last year defensively and kind of screwed up their run at the end of the season. But the Detroit Lions coming off a tough loss against the Kansas City Chiefs last week at Arrowhead, come in, play another top team in the NFC, and that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Joe, Joe talked about them just a minute ago with their injuries and everything, so you can kind of take it a little bit with a grain of salt, but they came in and they basically dominated this game from start to finish. Their offense through Jared Goff, I mean, they can beat you so many different ways. If you shut down the passing game, here's a two-headed monster of Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery running the ball. This past week against the Bucs, Jahmyr Gibbs had a career-high rushing yards, had a couple of really big runs, and also was involved in the passing game. So you take the running backs away, you still got to deal with Jared Goff and Sam Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams, and they've been firing on all cylinders for all but two of their games this year. I mean, and one of them was week one, which we were pretty big on this podcast that week one is a bit of an anomaly across the entire league. You know, look at last year, the Patriots winning week one, they win four games the whole season. So week one against Green Bay, I kind of give them a pass on that one, but you know, their schedule coming up, they're going into the bye week now. They got divisional matchup coming up next and some very interesting matchups for the Lions down the road. I expect them to keep rolling. Again, if they can stay healthy offensively and defense, especially defensively this year, I really think that this could be the Lions' year to make the Super Bowl. The NFC playoffs are going to be very interesting, you know, when the time comes. And I think that the Detroit Lions are going to come out on top. I just think they have too much firepower. You know, Joe, you talk about the coach quarterback combo with Dan Campbell and Jared Goff. I mean, Dan Campbell caught his flack when he first came in talking about kneecaps and everything like that. And Jared Goff was a castaway from the Los Angeles Rams in the Matthew Stafford trade. And they seem to have been a match made in heaven since Jared Goff has come to Detroit. They've kind of taken right off.
Has there been more of a win-win trade in sports history? In the entire history of the sport?
No. That is a massive one.
Bailey, Clinton Portis, but I think Denver got the better end of that deal. But, like, yeah. Dude, the Lions have won a playoff game when they never had before. And then the Rams won a Super Bowl in L.A. Like, I don't know. It's just
– And if the Lions win the Super Bowl, you know, at some point this year or in the next couple of years with Jared Goff, I mean, it just solidifies that, yeah. Right? I mean, you got all those draft picks. They turned them into – you know, this young core that they have. So give the Lions some serious credit for hitting on those draft picks and really constructing the team as is now. I like to see them keep rolling. It's going to be hard for me to have them voted out of the number one slot on these rankings. It would take a pretty bad loss for this team for me to really vote on any of these other teams. I mean, Joe, let's get into the honorable mentions. I'm sure there's some teams sitting down there that might be able to challenge in a couple of weeks here up these rankings.
Well, I just think that I don't know why. I really think every single one of these teams gets beat by the Chiefs in a neutral field right now. They just did it to the Lions. They have the Lions above the Rams, so you'd like to think that. I think they smoked the Colts. I think they smoked the Bucks, and I think they smoked the Packers right now. I don't know. The Chiefs, as a Patriots fan, this is the team. This is dad right now. This is daddy. Dad's home. Nobody's eating dinner. Everybody in your room, lights off at 9:30. Like, they're back. And Mahomes is – if you watched 5 minutes of that game, you would look at Mahomes throw one pass, and you're like, oh, crap, here they come. And then, dude, Geno Smith goes 30-plus game minutes without a completion. Like, this is just – Their defense is back. Mahomes is firing on all cylinders. I don't know if you got to get a couple other teams to add here. I know what's the last team we'll talk about is here, but let's keep our pants on for a couple more minutes.
Go ahead, Manish.
Yeah, the Eagles. You know, I've been critical of the Eagles. You got to give credit where it's due. Jalen Hurts had a perfect passer rating. Now, I typically shy away from citing passer ratings only because I have no idea how a passer rating is calculated. And if I don't understand a statistic, I don't like citing it. But he did have a perfect passer rating. Regardless of that, it was by far his most complete game of the season. He got A.J. Brown involved. They stretched the field, and good things happen when you look for A.J. Brown, and that was evident against the Vikings. Look, you got to give them credit for how they're playing right now. I don't necessarily care about the fact that they're defending Super Bowl champions, but you know they've kind of weathered this pre-bye storm pretty well. There's a lot of improvement to go. They've got a rematch against the Giants this week. 2 weeks ago, the Giants embarrassed them at MetLife Stadium on a short week. I would be shocked. I'm in agreement with you, Joe. I would be shocked if the Eagles don't win this week in Philadelphia. I think actually they'll win handily, even though I'm a big Jackson Dart believer. But I think that, look, the Eagles are positioned to make the playoffs. They're positioned to win the NFC East. I just don't think they're as good as some of these other teams, like the Bucs and like the Lions, for all the reasons that Burge mentioned. But you know, they are a top 10 team. Are they on the fringe of being a top 5 team? I don't necessarily think so. But look, if they're top 7, top 8, top 9 team, we're probably splitting hairs. But they do deserve credit for dominating that game against the Vikings offensively. Defensively, they've got a lot of issues still to contend with. I'm not sure they're going to be able to fix those this year. They get Brandon Graham out of retirement. You know, BG, a fan favorite, played exceptionally well in his final season in terms of sack totals, but I don't really know how much you're going to get out of him. Great locker room guy, though. The defense, to me, is the big question mark moving forward. I think the offense is making incremental strides, and it certainly was good to see Jalen Hurts, you know, recognize that he's got a top five receiver in the huddle and go to him a lot.
That was great for my fantasy team. Before I throw it to you, but real quick, Burge, other teams that I have in the honorable mention here, I would say San Francisco is probably 6th on our power rankings. Once again, coach quarterback combo. They have 2 competent quarterbacks and the best coach, in my opinion, the best coach in the league right now. So, I think Seattle will be there in the playoffs. I mean, I think San Francisco will be there in the playoffs. I'm not as high on Seattle. You had a lot of Sam Darnoldisms the other night, so I'm not as high on them as I used to be, but I definitely do think they deserve mention here as one of the best teams in the league, at least top 10, top 12. Burge, I think there's one team right now who's done something that even Tom Brady didn't do at his time with the team, which is win 3 straight home games. I mean, 3 straight road games. Burge, who was the last team in our honorable mention this week?
Well, it's obviously the New England Patriots. They're right there. They're the second seed in the AFC after 7 weeks. All right, they're coming
two wins over 500 team over plus 500 teams. Sorry.
Yes, and you know they're coming off a win. You can say what you want about the opponent. All right, I see Manish laughing over there. You can see what you want about the opponent, but when your quarterback has such an efficient day passing that he only throws 2 incompletions, doesn't turn the ball over, and the team blows out the bad teams
the second half
like they're supposed to. Yes, the defense doing their thing in the second half. How can you not start talking about this team? How can you not do it? They are taking care of business. Yes, they have a weak schedule, but they are taking care of business, and they're not sweating these games out. There still are a few little issues, like the starting off slow, which doesn't seem to be going away. I think that pisses Joe and I off more than anything about this team right now. But they're sitting at the second seed of the AFC. They have a game up on the Buffalo Bills, who are their only competition in the AFC East this year, because they luckily have the 2 worst teams in the NFL, in the Miami Dolphins and New York Jets, in their division. How can you not start getting on this team to start at least challenging for, at worst, like top 8? I don't know how anybody can.
Well, I feel like that's the whole point. Is like, we need to not get ahead of ourselves and realize here that they are now challenging for as a top 10 team. I don't think this team has flaws. I think the offensive line, I think the Will Campbell, God, I'm trying not to swear so bad. The Will Campbell love fest. I was going to call it a different kind of fest, but the Will Campbell love fest is going too far for me. I think he's a serviceable NFL tackle. I don't think he's a franchise NFL tackle. Still not sure if he was worth the number four overall pick. There's some spots on the line, like left guard that in center that need to be addressed. I think that I don't think Ramondre Stevenson with 20-25 touches a game last deep in December or January. He gets hurt every time we try to do that. I still think there's questions on the defense. I still think there's questions at linebacker. There's nothing but questions at safety. So there's a lot of things. The starts aren't good. If you start like that versus the Tampa Bay in a couple weeks, if you start like that versus Buffalo again at the end of the season while you're both vying for a playoff spot, I don't think it goes well. So there's a lot of things that need to be cleaned up, but for a
coach
podcast,
quarterback combo,
for a podcast that talks about coach quarterback combo so much, I dare you find besides literally the best team in the last decade, the Chiefs, you find me a hotter coach quarterback combo in the AFC right now. Find me one. Daniel Jones, if you right now tell me that you'll take the Daniel Jones freaking coach quarterback combo over Vrabel and May, I might throw this chair into the street, dude.
So two things. One, Bird, you said that the Patriots are not sweating it out. The 2 weeks ago, virtually the entire fourth quarter was a one possession game against the Saints. So that was.
I wasn't sweating. They were going to win the game.
It was a close game. The other thing is that Joe is much more reasoned and rational on the podcast than he is during the course of the week. Because I agree with virtually everything Joe just said about the Patriots and some of their shortcomings and kind of where they are in the NFL landscape in terms of challenging to be a top 10 team. I think that's spot on. I really do.
Call him out.
Yeah, coach quarterback combo. Here's the thing. I'm a big believer in Mike Vrabel. Really big believer. Slam dunk hire, should have done it a year ago. Don't know why he, had to be a consultant in Cleveland instead of being the Patriots head coach last year. That's a different story for a different time. I love Mike Vrabel. Last year, I was saying that I thought that Drake May was the best quarterback coming out of that class. And that was when Jaden Daniels was, taking his team to the playoffs and making a deep playoff run. So I just want to say that I love both the quarterback and the coach of the Patriots. In terms of who's hotter right now, you can make a legitimate case that Vrabel and Mayer, excluding the Chiefs, of course, are the hottest coach quarterback combo in the AFC. But I can make a valid case that Daniel Jones and Shane Steichen are. I'm not saying Daniel Jones
throw the chair.
Yeah, I'm not saying Daniel Jones has a brighter future than Drake May. I do not believe that. But in terms of how they are playing right now, I think it's, excluding the Chiefs, I think we're talking about 1-1 and 1A, basically. It's a toss-up. But both combinations have been really solid to this point, a little less than halfway through this season. I love the Patriots. I love what they're doing. I get where you guys are coming from. I think as I mentioned earlier in the week privately, or maybe even earlier today privately, the Patriots have been slop for the last few years. The Patriots fans, like you guys, have been looking for anything to grasp onto. And now you do have something real to grasp onto. I just think that the superlatives that you guys throw out, and you're not the only Patriots fans. I'm sure most of Patriot Nation feels the same way. It is a little bit much. You really do have to pump the brakes. I love Drake May's future. I love what he's done to this point. But citing, cherry-picking weird stats like three consecutive home games that Brady hasn't done, okay, well, I'm sure that's true. I'm not debating the veracity of that. But you can do that with virtually any player to say this guy is great. And I'll do that right now, even though I don't think this guy is great. I think he's actually terrible. And I mentioned it last week. There's one starting quarterback, maybe not starting for that much longer, but one starting quarterback through the first 7 weeks who hadn't thrown an interception. And you, on the surface, you'd be like, oh, my God, this is great. Guy hasn't thrown an interception and has reasonably solid passer ratings, which, again, I can't compute, through most of his starts. And that's Justin Fields. So I'm not saying Drake makes Justin Fields. What I am saying is that cherry-picking these stats to make Drake – May, better than he actually is to this point is really unnecessary, because I think May said it best this week. He said that Mike Vrabel says there's a difference between interesting and important stats. The interesting stat is that, yeah, he's won three consecutive road games, whatever that stat was. The important stat is that, you know, they're playing well as a team. So don't confuse interesting with important. And I think that's a great message that Vrabel gave to the team. I thought it was awesome that May conveyed that publicly this week. I just don't think there's a need to prop up Drake May to something that he's just not right now. That's not saying he couldn't be there potentially down the road. As an unbiased person, not a Patriot fan, not a Patriot hater, I will say that the future looks really bright for this young player. But he's not the next Patrick Mahomes. He's not a young Patrick Mahomes. I think somebody may have said that privately. He's not that. Patrick Mahomes, in his first year as a starter, threw for 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns. Was he the MVP that year? I think he may have been. Either way, those numbers are on a different stratosphere as what Drake May is doing. Drake May can be a Matthew Stafford. He can be a Jared Goff. There's nothing wrong with that. These are winning players in the league. I just think that superlatives are a little bit much.
Whoa, are we now saying that Drake May's ceiling's Matthew effing Stafford?
I'm not saying Stafford is his ceiling. I'm saying that he can become that type of player. By the way, Joe, Matthew Stafford in 10 years is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
I'm just we've had a great podcast today, and I think we could leave it. You had a very good point towards the end there. The Patriots are finally playing good team football or something like that. Finally playing good football, and I think that's a great place to leave it because I don't think there's anything else that we really need to – they're playing good football for the first time in like five effing years, so I think that's something we can hang our hat on. You guys want to give me some sleepers before we get out of here?
Sure, I'll start it off. My sleeper pickup on the waiver wire, if he's still available in your league, is Breshard Smith of the Kansas City Chiefs. He came in last week, helped out the Chiefs in that win with catching the ball five times. Kareem Hunt suffered a bit of an injury, got dinged up in that game. So monitor that status, but you know, given what we've talked about with the Kansas City Chiefs on this podcast and how their offense is firing on all cylinders, a running back where in a room where none of the guys have really seized that job. Isaiah Pacheco has been kind of underwhelming most of this season. Their running game has really lacked. So getting in a running back who is a pass catcher with Patrick Mahomes, I think would be a great plug and play if you need a flex play for bye week coverage this week. So mine is Breshard Smith, Kansas City Chiefs. Manish,
I love it, and I think we should reiterate that, you know, we're not talking about the obvious guys that people pick up in leagues. I mean, this is kind of really digging deep in the bargain bin. I'm going to go with a Buccaneers wide receiver not named Emeka Ebuka, and that's Tez Johnson, who had 9 targets last week. We know now that Mike Evans is going to miss most of the season, if not the entire season, with a broken clavicle. Certainly for fantasy purposes, I think he's going to be irrelevant the rest of the way, not going to be around. We don't know what Chris Godwin's future is, whether he's going to come back anytime soon. And Baker Mayfield has proven that it doesn't matter if you're a rookie. If he gains your trust, he's going to look to you. You've seen that with Ebuka, who's playing a little bit banged up. But Tez Johnson, each of the last 2 weeks has scored a touchdown. Last week, 84% route share. So he's getting opportunities. And I think that it seems to me that there's a developing chemistry there. I'm not saying he's going to turn into Emeka Ebuka. He's not. He's a 7th-round rookie for a reason. But he's clearly a guy, given the landscape of that wide receiver room, that can help you in a pinch if you need it. This is not an every week guy for the remainder of the season, but in this window of time, if you need a wide receiver in a deep league, I think that Tez Johnson makes a lot of sense. And again, Baker Mayfield doesn't care if you're a 5-year veteran or you're a rookie. If you are at the spot you need to be, he is going to trust you and throw you the ball, give you opportunities. He was second in the team in targets last week. I just think that that chemistry is going to continue to develop, you know, given the rash of injuries at the wide receiver position for Tampa.
All right. Well, you guys know that I'm not the most fantasy wizard here. So I'm going to go with a guy who might be a little bit under the radar, a guy who's been kind of in and out of the lineup this year, a guy who's kind of not even the most high profile, not even one of the top three high profile pass catchers on his offense. But Darnell Mooney, since coming back, been playing over 85% of the snaps. He had 68 yards receiving, led the team last week. I think he's a good guy for, like Burry said, for buy coverage if you have him on your bench, or if he's still lingering around in maybe a 10 or a 12-man league. I rostered under 80%, so probably more of a 10-team league guy. So, yeah, I like Darnell Mooney. I think Michael Penix Jr. is coming on. I think the Falcons offense is coming on. They've got some dog food coming up, including Miami this week. I think they have Carolina. They have Carolina coming up as well. Hold on, I just lost their schedule. So they have some dog food coming up. They have Miami, New England. Granted, we haven't been great against the pass. Indy hasn't been great against the pass. Then they have Carolina, New Orleans, the Jets, and then they end the season, two of their last three games, the Cardinals and the Saints. So I think they got a pretty light schedule coming up. I think they could be throwing the ball a lot. I think Darnell Mooney, when he's healthy, he plays over 85% of the snaps. When he's healthy, he's got 5+ targets a game. So yeah, give me Darnell Mooney to catch some passes and maybe a touchdown in the next couple weeks. Anything else, boys? It's been an action packed podcast, dude. I'm running out of friggin' Crisco, dude. Passing to chill. Anyways, that was the week 8 edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. You know where to find us on all social medias. Throw us a follow. Hit subscribe when you see us on YouTube. We will catch you next week. Goodbye.